Hello, Dr. Robert P. Driscoll. How are you today?
I'm great today. Thank you, Joe.
Dr. Driscoll, tell us about yourself, where you're from, and how long have you been here on the South Shore?
Joe, I actually grew up on Long Island in New York, attended a large Catholic high school there, and then matriculated at the University of Notre Dame, where I was graduated in 1977. I then went to medical school in New York City at New York Medical College. I was graduated from there in 1981. I then launched my post medical school training, first at the Navy, where I was an intern in general surgery at the Naval Hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia. And then I spent a year as a general physician with the U.S. Navy Seabees, and I was stationed on Guam and then for a short time in Mississippi. After that, I re-entered the civilian world, where I completed 6 years of surgery and trauma training at the State University of New York in Buffalo. After that, I re-entered the service and was a surgeon for the United States Navy for 3 years. And after that, I was graduated to the civilian world, where I landed in Weymouth in 1992, living in Hingham with my four children and my wife, Cindy, who I met while I was stationed on Guam. I've been in this community for close to 30 years now. My practice has varied from general surgery. I also originally was involved with the vascular surgery program here, and most recently stepped down as the trauma director on January 1st. I had run the trauma program for approximately 16 to 17 years.
Dr. Driscoll, we're here to talk about robotic surgery, and it's a fascinating field. And when we look at robotic surgery, what exactly is robotic surgery? And more importantly, is how is robotic surgery categorized as robotic assisted versus programmed, if you will?
So I think that's a very great question, Joe. And I just want to back it up a little bit to talk a little bit about the evolution of minimally invasive surgery, because I think robotic surgery has grown directly from that and is part of that particular type of practice. So I'm at a certain age that there was no such thing as minimally invasive surgery when I completed my training in surgery. Everything was done with big incisions. That was considered the standard, and that if you weren't making big incisions, you probably weren't a very good surgeon. In the 90s, there was an evolution and the scales fell from surgeons' eyes that maybe that wasn't the case. And borrowing from other specialties, particularly GYN, was the introduction of minimally invasive surgery in the form of laparoscopic surgery. So over the 90s and into the early 2000s, that became the standard of minimally invasive surgery. Small incisions with magnification with cameras, with instruments placed in a particular location depending on the procedure. And there was a great advancement, both in general GYN surgery, urologic surgery, colon surgery, and cancer surgery, as well as heart surgery, and in some forms of neurosurgery. So with that evolution came, you know, an exchange of ideas, and things, you know, ideas grow off one another. And there are limitations with any of the laparoscopic procedures as far as what your ability to do things, spaces you're able to get to, and limitations. So then the introduction of robot surgery. Now, there was probably a contribution, a little bit of robotic surgery in the military venue, because it's always been a challenge to try to get surgical care, resuscitative care, to the battlefield. And traditionally, that relied on a corpsman coming in and loading up a patient, being under fire, particularly if it's downrange, and then trying to transport somebody in the traditional way. So I remember seeing some videos around the time of early portion of this Iraq war about using robots to retrieve injured patients. And so that kind of opened everybody's eyes. So over the last maybe 15 years or so, there's been an evolution of this robotic surgery. And originally the focus in robotic surgery, again, an extension of the laparoscopic surgery and minimally invasive, was in urology and GYN surgery. They had spaces that were hard to get to with laparoscopic. There was particular suturing challenges, but there certainly was a need as far as a recovery for many of those things. So those particular specialties championed surgery, and the robots that were developed predominantly by the Da Vinci robot that was developed by the Intuitive Corporation in California was focused on that particular group. But as there was a learning curve entered there, and there was more organic interest in that kind of thing in the general surgery community and the thoracic community, then it grew into those particular components. So now, in this 2021, robotic surgery is becoming more of an accepted way and a state of the art rather than a standard, maybe, to proceed with some of these minimally invasive surgeries that heretofore had been done either minimally invasive laparoscopically or still in the open fashion. So that's where we are with robot surgery, and that's how it got started. It was really the natural evolution of ideas, building on ideas. How can we do something just a little bit better, just a little less painful? And I think everybody probably knows the importance of that pain management, particularly we're still in this epidemic of narcotic use. So we're all pain management, and the least painful operation is still a big part of whatever decision. So that's the evolution of robotic surgery. And it's landed, of course, in my lap. And I'm happy that it did, to have that opportunity to train and to expand my practice into the robotic field. As far as, let me just answer another question. It really is robotic assisted surgery. I think when I speak to patients before the operation, I don't want them to think that I'm gonna sit with a cup of coffee, a couple rooms down, press a button and have my robot go in and do the operation. It's not like that at all. I actually am controlling the instruments in a virtual way with my hands right next to the patient, but it's the robot, their robotic arms and robotic cameras allow me to control all of it myself.
Doctor, is that what is characterized as a telemanipulator? And how does that compare to a computer-controlled surgical procedure?
Well, I guess you would call it a telemanipulator. I think I'm deep on certain things in theology, but not necessarily on technology, I have to admit. But that's a telemanipulator because what I'm doing, if I can use the vocabulary interpretation right, is I'm manipulating the visual field myself. I drive the camera down into the operative field myself with a foot pedal. I move the instruments the same way, as opposed to a computer that is maybe telling me what to do, et cetera. This is a binocular visualization in real time of what's going on.
This is fascinating technologies in the medical field. One of the early criticisms, is that robotic-assisted surgical procedures are generally more expensive than the conventional surgical procedure. But has that changed over time?
I do not have a master's in business. And that is some of the discussion we've had every single time we introduce a surgical innovation that we think will benefit the patient. So my first and primary mission, vocation, and focus is how can I make the operation the safest and best for my patients. And that's my predominant decision about whether I'm going to use this technology or that technology. But I do remember that that was the same criticism of laparoscopic procedures. And it turns out that the more you do these things and the more you learn from the business point of view, the cost does go down. So using the instruments, which you know, that are reusable, can drive the cost down. If you use them five times, now we found, oh, well, we can actually use them 10 times. And so with more use of these things and more people trained, the overall expense goes down. Medical economics is fairly opaque. And I'm not gonna jump into it now, but I will say that my patients find significant value in this operation, even when they compare it to another minimally invasive procedure, because sometimes I have patients who've had both. I did an operation on them 10 years ago that was laparoscopic, and now I'm doing their operation robotically. And several of them said, not in a scientific way, but say, you know, that this robotic way is better. So that's as much as I can tell about that's my comment about the cost of things. But I think generally the cost is going down. One benefit, I segue or pivot into something else, and don't want to go sideways. The Intuitive Company and Da Vinci have significant monitoring and data monitoring information that they can drag off of the computer that's very helpful with respect to how long it takes you to do the operation, wasted motion, and some of the complications if you enter the database correctly. So the potential for cost savings on complications is substantial. You do save somebody a readmission from a complication like an infection or a technical complication from the procedure. It's something says it's like $100,000. So I kind of know that. That's sort of my neutralizing response to the cost.
My sister is a urologist, a surgical urologist. And so I was having a conversation with her recently in preparation for this interview you and I are having. And she volunteered that urologists pretty much help pioneer some of these robotic surgical assisted procedures. And I was surprised by that. I was startled by that. I didn't bother to really delve deep into that conversation. She's my younger sister, and you know, they always know it all anyway. But so my point is, can you tell us a little bit more about how in the urologic procedure, how robotics has played a substantial role?
Well, your sister is absolutely right. The urology surgical community and the gynecology surgical community championed the robotics. There's a couple of reasons for that. Culture is one of those, and I'm not throwing my specialty under the bus, but surgeons tend to be conservative, maybe not necessarily early adapters. Again, if you take a look at laparoscopic surgery, it began with gynecology surgeons. And I don't know enough about the mindset of the urology community in general, but they were are more prone for early adapters. They also had spaces, particularly the prostate, that was hard to get at with minimally invasive procedures. There was some benefit to doing those with minimally invasive surgery, but there were limitations more so than a lot of the operations that general surgeons. So they realized and saw the early importance of that particular thing for that, because they have, you know, the urologists have a limited number of procedures: nephrectomy, bladder surgery, prostate surgery, for their big cases. So they were able to kind of focus on that. And I think the companies, the company was mindful of that. And so that the early robots that they had, the, I think it's called the SI, that first generation was fit into their, what their needs were a little better than they did for the general surgery needs at that time. So it's a little bit of culture, a little bit of disease driven, a little bit of marketing driven. But I have a lot of respect for the urologists that were courageous enough to start that. And they've been very helpful here to support us, or particularly me, as I got started.
So here at South Shore Hospital, through the Brigham Doctors Network, the surgical practice that has embraced the use of robotic-assisted procedures is pretty common practice now, would you say?
I don't think so. There is no other general surgery robotics. If you start at Route 3, and if you stay pretty much east of Route 24, and go straight down toward Cape Cod and all of that range, ending, say, at Fall River, New Bedford, there are no general surgery robotic surgeons. There's one in Brockton, Good Sam, and there's one, I think there's one or two down at South Coast. So there has not been an adaptation across several significant medical centers. So in general surgery, I'm talking specifically general surgery. I don't know what the rest of the state is like. I think that it's a one or twosies. It is certainly not the predominant way in surgical departments. I think once it gains this nidus and we're still in the early adapter phase when you look at innovation, I think it probably in 5 years it's going to be substantially different. Some of that's going to be market driven, you know, where, you know, or the, as the kids call it, FOMO, fear of missing out. But others will be once somebody shows some success with this and some and the value added. And again, maybe some of the cost goes down, but also as the training becomes more easily accessible and affordable, then I think you're going to see a significant pulse up in the use of robotic general surgery, expanding to colorectal and some of the other areas.
Dr. Driscoll, do you use robotic-assisted surgeries in your practice?
Yes, I do. It's become a very common portion and a significant portion of my practice in the last year. I have focused on predominantly three procedures that I had previously done minimally invasive, and that is inguinal hernias, particularly bilateral inguinal hernias or recurrent hernias, incisional hernias and ventral hernias, those are abdominal wall hernias, and gallbladder surgery. Those are common procedures that I had done minimally invasively, and I felt that they would be the ones that would derive the most benefit from switching to the robotic-assisted platform.
And these are procedures that you're performing right here on the South Shore?
Performing them, yes, on the South Shore right now. Very significant portion of my practice. Starting to see referrals of those particular patients for the robotic approach.
What kind of training did you have to go through to begin this incorporation of robotic-assisted surgeries?
I'll talk specifically about the robotic training, but I think I need to say a word about what needed to be done in preparation. And then I had a very large laparoscopic minimally invasive practice. I had championed and was the developer of a lot of the minimally invasive operations at South Shore, particularly hernia surgery, both ventral, incisional, and inguinal, using laparoscopic minimally invasive techniques. So I pivoted off some of that because something builds on those things all the time. And then I had extensive sort of prep when I was in the service about the importance of minimally invasive surgery on returning sailors to active duty, which may seem evident, but was a little bit opaque at the time when it was introduced. But in any event, so when the robotic surgery issue started to arise in general surgery, and when the organization, Da Vinci or the Intuitive Company, was looking for surgeons who might be good allies with respect to robotic surgery, they came to me because my practice was sort of generally known, and they actually observed my practice over a period of months to see whether I would be somebody, I hate to use the word worthy, but somebody that would be worthwhile for them to train in robotic surgery. And then they offered that to me. And they sponsored all of the training. And the training involved several platforms, for want of a better word, and a significant amount of time. So there was simulation-based training. We have a simulator at the Brigham in the simulation lab. And I had access to the lab because of my relationship with Doug Smink up there, and also because I taught the trauma courses in the simulation lab at the Brigham. So that's where the simulation trainer was. So I could just finish that trauma training and jump on the simulator there when I needed to. And then when South Shore had it, I was able to use their simulated training. And the simulator is a lot of things. It's sort of very elementary things on how to use the console, how to use your feet in conjunction with your hands. Wasn't even any procedure related. And then as we moved on, the simulated suturing on the simulator. And then I went to spent probably a total of 4 days visiting sites to see surgeons, who were advanced in robotic surgery in a variety of different settings. I went to New Hampshire, I went to Boston, and I also went down to out to Good Samaritan to watch a surgeon practice and see how it could apply. And then I did a series of laboratories on animals of suturing, doing simulated hernia repairs. There's a whole learning system that was down in Atlanta, learning techniques, and there were drills. It's like any sports event where you do little things, you learn how to use the quarter, the energy, how to manipulate your hands, how to move the camera, how to do it in conjunction. So it's a very strict curriculum that was taught by professional teachers that had been not only certified teachers, but certified in teaching the robot. And then back again to more simulated training and more drills at South Shore, and then practicing on some animal models in our community to practice suturing, and then starting to select the right cases. And the first cases I did, the first 10 cases I did, I brought one of the surgeons in, particularly a surgeon from South Coast, to come in, and he didn't do the cases, but he was sort of the proctor and watched me do surgery. And after I'd done those particular 10 cases, then, and then passed mustard on my technical abilities, ability to use the machinery correctly and safely, and then started again to build my practice. So I don't know how many hours, but it really took about 2, maybe up to 3 years to do that. Somewhat that was truncated by COVID. And because of my running the trauma program, I had to spread it out a little bit in times that I was available. I think the speed of it can be pushed down a little bit, also because we now have a lab in New England, or they have a lab in Hartford. Now we brought I brought along another robotic surgeon, and the company is largely doing the training. I'm just there to support Dr. Neil Goucher, another Brigham surgeon who will complete his training in the next couple of weeks in the lab, and then he will start to do some cases, either proctored by me or an internal proctor, but I'll be there to support his first 50 cases so that we can have really build out a program that's branded, a little bit more comprehensive. And Dr. Goucher is a well-known laparoscopic and bariatric surgeon. He has a very busy practice. So I think we're going to grow this thing quickly and substantially, and I can feel the momentum building on it.
Dr. Driscoll, you really have pioneered the use of robotic-assisted surgeries here in this region. So from your perspective, what does this future look like?
So I think the future is very bright for robotic surgery, and I think it's very bright for the patients in our community. I think the first thing is we're going to focus on improving what we do now, those 3 or 4 operations that we do now. And after that, we're going to pivot and take a look at some other diseases and some other organ systems. The next evolution would be in colorectal surgery and doing colectomies, particularly the low anterior resections for rectal cancer. Other areas that would include foregut surgery, including complex hiatal hernia surgery, probably bariatric surgery along the line. And we don't do very much pancreatic surgery. My colleague, Dr. Tom Clancy, is a robotic cancer surgeon at the Brigham and has that in his repertoire. But I think we could progress to doing almost, I would say 75% of general surgery could be robotic based, and almost 95% of the minimally invasive procedures can be robotic.
I would definitely think that pancreatic procedures, where it's really difficult to access without, you know, large incisions. And so that clearly would seem to be an area of great promise.
Yes, it is. And, you know, again, we try to stay in our lane at, you know, Brigham Surgery down here, because that's unique enough surgery to go with a specialist. But the more surgeons that we can get trained, as you know, we bring Neil on, and now we're 2, and we have, you know, 6 or 7 more that would, you know, could be trained, then we'll have a real, you know, nucleus to really build out the program. I see Brigham Surgery with a co-sponsor in South Shore Health as being a hernia center of excellence for Southeastern Massachusetts. It's something that is a difficult group of patients, and I'm talking about even the more complex surgical procedures that really involve reconstruction of the abdominal wall. And there's almost an unlimited value in doing those procedures robotically because they're minimally invasive and we can do more. So with respect to that particular problem, I see it as a sort of a whole program that's sort of disease related, also within the robotic spectrum.
Dr. Robert P. Driscoll, it has been great visiting with you. I'd love an opportunity to come back and visit with you again, particularly as this whole robotic procedure continues to evolve.
Well, thank you very much. You guys have lifted me too.
Thank you again, and continue to stay safe and healthy, sir.
Will do. Thanks.